Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings and welcome to Mount Olympus. I am Hercules Invictus, and today I'm proud to bring you Nous. Nous, what is that, you might ask? It's Olympian mind power, and it's very old. The concept was first presented by Anaxagoras, one of the pre-Socratic philosophers, and it exists to this day through manifestation literature, where the mind is all, and our physical reality and our internal realities are products of the mind. So we're going to be talking about this today, and we're going to start with Setna of Kemet. Greetings, Setna. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. How are you doing?
I'm doing great, finishing up a chapter for Llewellyn. So that's going to be eating up most of this week. But I'm looking forward to our conversation today. How have you been?
I'm doing excellently well. I have been working all day creating my new Ushabti statues, my spirit statues, and there's quite a demand for them already. I've been getting many requests. I'm going to be sending you and Athena one. They look exactly like you, and they will help you on spiritual journeys. I will show you later on Facebook or what have you, or I'll text you what they look like. The best what I can show you belongs to a wonderful wizard whose name is Tom Dykeman, who lives on Long Island. And it looks exactly like him. My Ushabtis have an Egyptian mummiform body, and the rest of it looks like you. They can have in their hands a phone. They can have an attaché case. They can have a wand. They don't have to be using ancient Egyptian tools. I don't think you need a scythe or to work with a crook and flail or farming tools. I don't think that's necessary anymore. I think the Ushabti, which is a spirit statue and very much part of the spiritual movement of consciousness that we're working with, should have been updated if you're going to use them now. So I do. And there is an activation ritual, I won't say the word spell, but ritual, which links the image with your consciousness, which will help people travel into other dimensions. It's kind of like a spiritual aid, a crutch. It's something that people that are just beginning to do things in the spiritual realm, in the psychic realm, sometimes need a little encouragement with something that's a physical object. And so I have found in my work over the years that these Ushabtis will give you what you need.
So how did the concept begin with these Ushabtis? Because it sounds phenomenally fascinating, and I like the fact that they don't need to have ancient implements to do their work.
Well, I mean, we don't use them anymore, do we? I don't have a plow in my hand. I don't stand behind cattle. And, you know, I don't need a shepherd's crook. I don't have any sheep. But I do have a cell phone. So my Shabti, my own personal Shabti, is carrying a cell phone. And the other hand, he has a cold brew iced coffee in it.
There you go.
Why? Because that's what I do. Those are things that are de rigueur to Michael, to Setna Comwest. By the way, I want to mention something about Setna Comwest. Setna Comwest is the ninth child of Ramesses II. He was the one, the high priest of Amun-Ra, or Ra-Amun in my case, who actually worked with the architects to create the tomb of Ramesses II, the Ramesseum, at Abu Simbel, and also the most beautiful tomb in all of Egypt for his mother, who was the goddess, the queen, Nefertari. It is incredible. And I was watching something the other day, and they mentioned Comwest. And I tingled all over because I am so attuned to that incarnation, and he helps me constantly. Although Comwest died probably a little over 4,000 years ago, I feel such an umbilical connection, a silver cord connection with him. Now, as to the Shaktis, in ancient times, there's a misconception that they were used for afterlife. They are that also, but in Egyptian magic and Egyptian philosophy and cosmology, we use sympathetic magic, image, to hold something. People sometimes, as I say, need something physical to focus on. Some psychics use a crystal. Some use tarot cards. I do both. But this is a completely Egyptian, Kemetic technique. People that practice voodoo use a voodoo doll also. This is, in a little different. This is to connect your spiritual energy to the universal energy. And it's kind of like, like I said, a crutch or an aid. They are images. Mine are all about 7 inches tall. They're easily held in the hand, Hercules. And you folks out there, easily held in the hand. And so the person can hold it and focus on what they're trying to accomplish. The Ashapti puts the energy onto another plane, onto another plane of existence, so that you're working, and my ritual says, as I work on the physical plane for a positive change, so I ask the Ushabti to be my marker in the universe to help me make spiritual changes in the other dimensions. It's an entirely ancient concept that I've brought into the modern world.
That is fantastic. And I've seen your artistic work. I have a staff that you created. You're very creative. You're very artistic. And your artwork has a lot of soul.
So, but this is keeping us on topic. We're working with the spirit forms. Now, in linking this with the Grecian energies, I have also lives within the Ptolemaic period, which is the Greek Egyptians.
Yes.
All the way back into the Library of Alexandria and what have you. And this is where this concept of high spiritual energy came, I think, into the Greek consciousness. It was there much earlier, obviously, but got its golden age, its highest point, in Alexandria, and then also in Athens. Would you not say so?
I would say so, that it reached peaks, but there were earlier peaks and later peaks as well.
Yes.
We're joined by Michael Del Russi, too. I'm going to let him in.
Oh, I'm so glad. Hello, Michael.
Hello, how are you?
I'm wonderful, and Hercules, of course, is Hercules. He's amazing.
You're all amazing. I think we have a little bit of feedback on somebody's machine. Is somebody too close to their computer?
I am on my phone. I'm not on a computer. I'm on my phone. But are you getting feedback from me?
The feedback was there from the beginning. So I tested my line, then I muted it to see if it was on my line. So I think it's on your line.
I'm going to mute my phone for a second.
Okay.
I'm back.
Okay. The echo's gone. Fantastic. Okay, so problem solved. Let's just summarize for Michael. The ancient Greeks had a concept called nous, like Zeus, but with an N. And it means literally the mind, and in particular the divine mind. And it was popularized and first introduced by Anaxagoras, who was one of the pre-Socratic philosophers. And his concept was that the potential for everything exists in everything, and that all of reality is shaped by the mind, which is the nous. And as the concept developed, nous could mean a bunch of different functions of the mind. But in philosophy and in metaphysics, it was the divine mind. So we're going to be calling it the Olympian mind in our inquiries. We started there, and then Sedna Kemet, he shared how he has been putting together these Egyptian-inspired figurines that are used by people to perform creative acts and astral travel. and he was explaining about how they work. So now you're caught up. And Shetnev Kemet created a staff for me a while ago, and it's a beautiful staff and has a Hercules cluster of crystals on top of it. And so he's a very artistic gentleman, and his creativity is to be greatly applauded and admired.
Yes, I have seen his objects. It's fascinating, to say the very least.
And we're talking about the different peaks in Hellenic lightness and Egyptian lightness, and what happens when the two streams are joined together, as they were during the Hellenistic period, which were the dynasty of Alexander.
I'm very interested in how he receives his intuition utilizing some of these tools that he's been mentioning. I know he mentioned tarot briefly. I have not had that experience myself, except with a Ouija board many years ago. I did experience some activity, quite a bit of activity, but I've never used those kind of the divining tools, so to speak. So I'd like to hear more about that. I mean, it's absolutely fascinating.
Michael, I have a guide. His name is Soren Siti. He is a celestial keeper of a library. He's an astral being. He's never been a human or mortal being. And he works with me as a connection, a spirit connection. And I know Hercules also works in the same way. It's not exactly channeling, because now I'm able to do it consciously. When I work with it as trans channeling, I was not conscious. I astral projected out of my body and allowed him to speak through me, which is a very uncomfortable process. And I prefer what's going on now. With respect to tarot cards, when I work with a customer or a client, I should say, I ask of them their birth sign and their full name. And from that, I'm able to work. I feel the energy that person is, their essence, and then I can read for them. And I'm very successful doing this, and I've been doing it for many, many years. But I also do work with these Ushabti. This is the spirit statue Hercules spoke of. They are an astral link, an astral connection. The Greeks also used them. Hercules, if you think about it, the Greeks and the Romans used lead and wax dolls to do very much the same that I do. So I'm linking it that way, because the Ptolemies, who were the Egyptian Greeks, were using the wax and lead, but they were also using alabaster, lapis lazuli, turquoise, faience, and wood, things that were, and crystals, to make these energies go. All of my Ushabti have crystals within them. That I work with. That's why that's why I ask people about their astral signs. I use whatever crystals work with that particular sign, and it does vibrate with the person that works with them.
I'm sorry. I just wanted to ask, when was the first time you were able to identify your guide? There must have been a point, obviously, in the beginning of your work, when you were able to identify some of these guides, how did that come about?
I was 17 years old. It was summer night. I had stayed up very, very late to watch a very funny quasi-Egyptian movie called The Land of the Pharaohs with Joan Collins. It only goes on 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning, usually, back in those days. And I was overtired, but I was watching it because I wanted to see Joan Collins, because I thought she was beautiful. And I was half asleep, and I heard, "Michael, Michael." And I looked around, and I thought, okay, maybe my best friend is screaming at me outside the window. It was summer, and he did that often. We'd go out, and, you know, I'd jump out my window, and we'd go out somewhere. That's how kids are, you know. It wasn't him. Suddenly, I looked. I had an altar in my room already. a hereditary pagan. I always was. I've always been involved with magic. Mm-hmm. And there appeared in my room a dwarf. He was wearing an orange robe. He had longer earlobes, a gold Egyptian collar, hand-beaten collar around his neck, the same kind of material on his wrists and his ankles, and he was barefoot. Mm-hmm. And he said his name was Saran Siti. Okay, I turned on the lights. I thought I was seeing things. I was overtired. I was, you know, I didn't, like most people, I didn't believe that was what was happening. I wanted proof because I'm that way. I turned on the light, and there he was. He was still there. Translucent. I could see through him, but he was not transparent. So he wasn't a spirit. He was a being of substance. Mm-hmm. And he said to me that he was my guardian and my guide, and he would help me through these kind of things. And so it was an astral and spiritual connection that I had with this Saran Siti. I still do from time to time. He can be a bit overwhelming, and so I do a lot of my own intuitive work. But he was a great teacher. Amazing, because he was not from this dimension. He doesn't come from the physical plane. So that was an amazing connection. In ancient Greece and in ancient Egypt, this is what happened when a priest, I am called the Shemsu, I am a high priest. And when a high priest reaches this point, I was a student high priest, obviously, at 17. But I was learning about these things.
Is that Egyptian or Greek? Is that?
Both.
Both.
There is a book called Egyptian Cosmology, and before that, there's another book by John Anthony West, which has also just been re-brought out. It's called The Serpent in the Sky, which talks about the kind of energies we're dealing with now.
I see.
He saw the power of the Greeks, the ancient Greek priests and philosophers, and he also saw the energy of the Egyptians and melded them together.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's fascinating, to say the least.
So this is where I am at right now. I have linked these energies, and as Hercules has too. It's why we were brought together. All my life, there was someone going to enter my life named Hercules. Well, in my mind, sword and sandals things, I thought that was Steve Reeves. You know, because I always had a fascination for him. To me, he's the ultimate Hercules. And then about 5 years ago, I met this fellow whose name is Hercules. And I've been working with him ever since.
Well, yes.
I'm honored by your words.
That's been exciting for me, too, to say the least. An event in my life, frankly, like no other. Where at this point, I have met Hercules and have met you now as well. And being able to share these things in a way, for me personally, I could have never before. I circulated in the metaphysical community here in Morristown, New Jersey. I learned a lot of things, but nothing compared to what we've been sharing here. So I'm learning a whole lot to what you're
Michael, we have you and I have an amazing connection, and his name is Michael. That means who is like God, who is a challenge. That is the archangel. In my tradition, his name is Duabmutef, and that's an ancient Egyptian, but he's also Michael.
I see.
The Hebrew, when they left Egypt, and this is derogatory because we're in Passover, as it were, soon, Meshta, or who's also called Imset, Api, Keb, Senuf, and Duabmutef are Michael, Uriel, Raphael, and Gabriel. That is their incarnation in the ancient Egyptian traditions, long before the Abrahamic traditions. So you and I have that connection. We are Michaels. We are, I believe, and he's always been with me. The archangel has always been around me since I was a child, and I know he follows you as well.
Well, that's exciting to hear those insights from you. I've I have not been. There may be something lacking in my my overall. I won't use the term channeling because some people object to that. In my overall spiritual pathway, if you will, in terms of as many mystical experiences as I've had, and I've had more than a few, I have been unable to identify who is making the connection with me or what is making the connection. Any gift at all I may have comes from the only thing I could call it is a divine insight. I get a lot of that. I suddenly think of a person, and 2 weeks later, this happened recently, I either find out they've died or they have sent me a letter or have called me. This has happened to me multiple times this year. Now, it's all happened to everyone. You know, everyone has experienced this. I've also experienced other things that definitely cosmic that I cannot explain. But I've never had an entity actually identify themselves to me. So I'm very impressed by what you're sharing with me, to say the very least. It's something I wish I could tap into, but as of this stage, it has not yet happened.
When you do your meditations, if you're working with your name, Michael, wear red. The color of the archangel is red. And you'll see, if you have something that's red, it will bring the energy up high. If you think back to the temples of ancient Greece, and Hercules will agree with me, all of the gods and goddesses were painted in lifelike colors.
Yes, they were. They weren't white or ivory or tan or yellow. They were painted lifelike. They were like mannequins. And back then they had some animatronic type of technology. So they were able to make some of these statues move around. And they treated the statues as they would a person. And they would have festivals when they were bathing the statue or they were changing the statue's clothes. So the statue was treated as a receptacle for the divine spirit of the gods.
This is exactly what I do with the Ushabtis, exactly, and that's why I wanted to segue into that. We have coming up soon, I think it's May 1st or so, the celebration of Athena. They would change, the priests and priestesses would go and change her gown and her crown and her jewels, and the energy was felt very strongly by the worshippers in Athens and elsewhere in Greece. The connection of that goddess, if you don't want to call her a goddess, call her Michael, call her a watcher, an energy form that is protective and beneficent, positive, and bringing that energy forward so that she could help the people around her. She was brought by the higher universal forces so that she could watch over that region. And I think all of the world has these watchers. Different names, different forms. And in our past lives, which I believe in, by the way, reincarnation, we travel through and we do have watchers that watch over that particular thing which we call the soul so that they know what's going on with us and what's going on in our Commedia dell'arte story, you know, because we're making it up as we go along. I always made my customers laugh as a makeup artist. I would say, yes, I'm a makeup artist. I'm making it up as I go along. And
that's
they
fun.
Loved it because it was fun. Well, you know, and I use, by the way, all of my artwork has makeup in it because it's something that gave me an awakening. Cosmetics woke me up, brought me to life, and also paid for my bills all my life. So I'm grateful to the cosmetic gods and goddesses. And I add all of my statues have eyeshadows or lipstick or some kind of melted thing in them that make them different than anybody else's work because I've included makeup into my work.
In the Abrahamic traditions, the gods are often treated as angels. And if you study angelology, especially, you know, as it was presented at various points in time before the modern ages, the Greek gods are often included amongst the charities. That's the class of angels. Some of them, because they found the women fair and had children unto them, beings of renown, identify them with the Watchers or the Nephilim or beings like that. And some of them identify them with the powers and the principalities. In the Abrahamic religions, believe that there are angels or minor gods that have been sent to administer to the needs of all people on the earth. And I forget which one is for Greece. I forget which one is for Egypt, but they're listed there in the angelologies. So there's a lot of lore, and there are books, medieval grimoires like the Arbatel, which I'm not that fond of, but anyway, it's a very interesting book, and it shows you how the ancient Olympic spirits, they call them, are integrated into the Abrahamic schema of higher powers.
I find it interesting that the sacred 12 Olympian deities are very much now worshipped as they were in ancient times in Greece itself. And I have a friend in Cyprus that is built, has a temple of Apollo that's attended by 2,000 people now that come and worship Apollo.
Yes, that's a big struggle that's still going on throughout a lot of Europe. A lot of Europe is trying to return to its aboriginal spirituality. It's very hard, but the movement has been growing, as you say.
What's wonderful is in, I think, Greenland and Iceland, the state deities are Isatru, Odin, Freya, Loki, Thor, et cetera, those are the state gods. Like in, of course, Spain, it's Catholic, and Italy, it's Catholicism. So this is interesting that that's coming back. In Egypt, unfortunately, because we have a very powerful Islamic state, the Neferu, the gods and goddesses of pantheon of Egypt, are still considered pagan and forbidden. However, in Alexandria, there are people called the Farami, and they follow the ancient traditions that I do.
And these traditions, again, they're not orthodox, although there is orthodoxy with some groups, and they're not orthopractic, although there is orthopraxy with some groups. It's like any other spirituality. It's what your relationship is with the divine that is the most important.
I agree. I never say that my way is the only way, because that's not true. Everybody feels and does what the higher forces present with them. And that's the only way you can do it.
I'd like to share with Michael DeRussi something that happened because he asked how the powers introduce themselves. I meditate twice a day and sometimes three times a day. And sometimes I get communications during my meditation. And I got a entity who claimed to be Zeus. And he spoke with me for a while. And then I decided after the meditation, I would shelve it because it was a pretty big thing he spoke to me of. And I figured I would meditate on it further. Well, I guess I wasn't given that luxury because within days, I got calls from various metaphysicians from different traditions and interacting with different pantheons altogether, who called and said they got a message for me, and the message was the same message given to me by Zeus. And those who were in tune with the Hellenic spirituality identified it as Zeus. So I guess that meant I couldn't shelve it. I had to think about it right away. And the message was very important. At the time, I had father issues, and Zeus had communicated with me and spoke about fatherhood and how, you know, he asked me what I wanted for my children. And I said, well, just to be part of their lives and, you know, to be loved and to love them in turn. And he said that that's what he wants from his children as well. And it was difficult. I had to deal with a lot of issues, as we all do, about, from growing up. But that brought it to the surface, and I had to deal with it. And I'm still not done dealing with it, but I'm pretty much done dealing with it. So that's how that identification came about. And now I know the feel of the energy. So whenever it's near, I know who it is.
That's fascinating to me, because I've had a hard time in my communications, which should come through what I call white light meditation. That's how I begin my work, always with taking in, I call it the foundational white light, but we can call it many things, but taking in white light through the top of my head. My palms are open, and almost immediately, this has been going on for many years, I experience the sensation. It's a pressure feeling. It's a feeling of pressure, and I can actually feel the white light, you know, permeating my physical body. I can feel it. I've been using that in terms of healing right now, because the arthritis in my shoulders has become at times unbearable. And I can say without doubt that the condition absolutely improves when I go into a white light meditation. But what I wanted to ask, and this is fascinating to me for both of you, forget the question, pertains to both of you, do you feel as though these separate entities that you've been communicating with, are they actual separate entities in and of themselves, or are they simply extensions of one divine, indestructible, absolute, self-existent cause in terms of creation is concerned?
I'll tackle that first, and then Setna will. And I'm just speaking for myself here. In the Chaldean oracles, I believe it is, the goddess Hecate claims that they look and behave the way they look and behave because we expect them to look and behave that way. So I found in my own religious quest, because I have studied very many systems beyond the Olympian that drew me, including some native traditions as well, that the force behind the manifestations wears cultural masks. And for some people, they think they're being misled, but it's they wear the cultural mask to communicate with us optimally. So because I'm more likely to listen to Olympus than I am to listen to a system that I'm not familiar with or not knowledgeable about or not drawn to, that my communications take place either generically or with Olympian faces. And that communication works best for me. It's the system that my soul most resonates with. The personages that I interact with are real. They're not make-believe personages. But you can describe them as masks. You can describe them as aspects. This is the way the universe and I communicate, and it works very well for me. So I'm comfortable with that. But I know when I've explored UFO spirituality, they've appeared as UFO beings. When I've explored Hyperborean spirituality, they've appeared as the Norse pantheon and spirits. When I explored Hesperiden spirituality, they've appeared even in Arthurian and elemental and fairy lore type of personages. And again, the wisdom is the same, the love is the same, the vision is the same, but the mode of communication differs. And again, it's tricky, and it leads into all these discussions on hard and soft polytheism. I believe that both are true to an extent. I also have no problem seeing the gods as archetypes, and that doesn't contradict with there being real entities as well. I know some pagans get upset at me because I like the archetype theory and I find it very useful. But for me, again, it's a little of both, but it's mostly they will talk with me in a way that I'm more likely to be receptive to. And that's how I view it. Sedna, how about you?
There is a high spiritual force a universal force that I believe everything else stems from. I don't want to call that a male or female force. In Egypt, there is a, I want to call it a force. It's not a god or a goddess. It's called Kamu. And it is not male or female or anything. It's called the unseen seen, that which is unseen but yet sees. And it's all things. To the Star Wars generation, it is the Force. We also, I believe, have what I call stewards or Neteru or nomarchs that are watching over certain things. The ancient peoples needed to assign duties to their deities. One would guard over war. One would be intelligence. One would be death. One would be childbirth, et cetera, et cetera. That's a human concept. That was what we assigned them to. That's what we said they do. It's not necessarily the actual energy. It's what we understood, as Hecate said. It's the form that they took that we would understand. So I believe there's a very high universal force, but that the other beings that we are in touch with are quite real. Christians, Jews, Muslims believe in the angels as angelic force. They are, to me, demigods and goddesses, like the seraphim and cherubim, in the other levels of angels. I'm also educated in those forms as well. My direction comes from the East. When I pray, I say, "Eastward stand I," and I bring the energy to me, and it is the right level. The energy comes to me from my Kemetic sources, my Egyptian sources. So we all have our own different experiences. Michael, you have yours as beings of great power and light, and you will always have that because you are, your energy is crystal clear. It's quite beautiful, and I do see it while I'm looking at you right now. So,
well, I thank you so much for saying that.
It's true. If you have with you clear quartz crystals, apatholite, selenite, these things are white energy and white light, and that will gather that even more to you. So those, particularly clear quartz crystals, Hercules will also give me, it will be in accord with this. That energy is very powerful and will gather strength. The other thing that really clear quartz crystals work is that, as we know, they're in computers, they're in television sets, they are electrical generators and batteries. They store energy, which is why we can use them in computers and such. So that crystal energy is not only metaphysical, but literally physical. It gathers the energy for you. If you hold that in your hand, you're pulling the energy out of the air into yourself. I get very excited when I say these things because I want to teach people how to do that. I know Hercules does and you do, to use that beautiful white light. You know,
well, you said one thing that was absolutely amazing that gripped me right away. Mentioned the color red in terms of, I believe, Aries. Before I knew anything about anything, I was very, very young, you know, a preteen. My favorite color was always red. It's amazing that you would say that. It's amazing to me because before I...
It is the power color of Archangel Michael. And he is your watcher. You weren't given the name Michael by accident. Michael chose you, and your parents said the name, and it was pronounced into the universe, and here you are.
I see. I find that fascinating that you would even mention that, because I had no wisdom, no education in that area, and my favorite color had always been red. Now, I know that, and those who study the base fundamentals of astrology feel that's also a sign of a warrior, you know, or in, you know, a battler, if you were, someone who goes to war when it's needed. But beyond that, I knew nothing, you know. I knew, so
it's a color, red is the color of passion. And after all, it, a war is definitely passion. People have high emotions, you know. The god Aries, his dress and Mars in Rome is dressed in red because he's at war. Athena on her robe is gold. Her robe and in the temple is gold, but she also has head on the shield, on the inside of the shield, and I think she wears rubies as well. Correct, Hercules? Athena wears red too.
One of the colors that she wears is red. Hercules is often depicted in red, although there's also the green and gold, and there's the blue and white. There's all sorts of color schemes. Hercules has quite a wardrobe symbolically. Also in Theosophy, which is a modern iteration of the ancient wisdom, Michael, the Archangel Michael, is on the same team as Hercules. Hercules is the Elohim, and Michael is the Archangel of the first cosmic ray, which is often represented by the color blue, and it focuses on divine will. Not so much divine will as it's currently understood, but it's getting in touch with the divine inside yourself and recognizing that divine spark and then embedding the divine spark into yourself and expressing it through your actions to bring that energy into the world.
When I work with people, I dress in cobalt blue. I wear a sapphire ring, and I wear a blue stone on my forehead. So you're right. And I'm Virgo, and Virgo is blue. That is our color zone. So when I want to help someone with healing, whereas Michael sees red and clear white, I see blue, and I send that blue like the Blue Cross. I send that to people to heal them, to help heal them. I'm not going to say I can completely heal people. They have to have the will to do that themselves too, to accept that energy and also to grow with it and prosper with it. You can, you know, you can have a socket in the wall all you want with all that power behind it, but if you don't plug that into something, it's not going to go anywhere.
Very true.
So when you talk about Naus, I think I'm pronouncing it correctly, Naus. I've heard of that. I heard of that some time ago. A metaphysical teacher was sharing some of that with me. Is that a representation in terms of the mind of both intelligent and intuitive thought? I mean,
yes.
Or is it is? Okay.
It's like every other concept, it's come to evolve in time. Like, for instance, the words noble and gentle mean something very different today than they meant originally. Originally, somebody who was noble was of the nobility. And someone who was gentle was of the gentry. So nobles and landowners in ancient times were not very spiritual or tolerant people. They often did horrible things, and they felt it was the right to do it. So in antiquity, it meant something different. The word daemon, or a demon, originally meant an intermediary spirit. So angels were daemoness. Hermes was a daemon. It just meant a messenger, some in-between spirit, whether good or bad. So now it means something very bad. So the same thing with the concept of nous. Nous has evolved a lot, and it's meant different things in different times. Originally, it was the force that we had, the divine force to manipulate matter and to create mind. So mind was something seen as something separate from matter and creation. But of course, as people think about it and add to it, it's going through various permutations. But to name the show, let me go back to the early designation, because it's still around in New Thought.
Exactly. It's a New Thought. I mean, I think the whole foundation of New Thought is based on that we're mentalists by nature, and we are expressions of a mental universe. And I, for my specialty, if you will, my passion is to explore everything Jesus taught in terms of this. And a lot of what we're sharing tonight in my area of study surrounds Yahushua, or Jesus, if you will. I believe that that's what he tried to bring to the world as we know it.
May I say something?
Yes.
Michael?
Yes.
Jesus was brought to Egypt when he was mm-hmm. just born. And mm-hmm. for the first 13 years of his life, he studied in the temple of Isis at Philae. And if you look at the statues of Mary with Jesus on his lap, they are mm-hmm. copies of Isis and Horus. He was mm-hmm. taught all the Kemetic traditions. And yes, later he went, when he was 13, he had his bar mitzvah in Jerusalem. And he reads mm-hmm. even, it's actually this week, when he read at the temple in what we call Palm Sunday now, but when he was 13, that was his bar mitzvah. And he was reading and he was combining the Hebrew tradition and the Egyptian traditions that he had learned all his youth. And then mm-hmm. he entered into yeshiva, and by the time he was 30, he was to start his ministry, which is what happens with a rabbi. Jesus mm-hmm. was definitely a very, very talented, very knowledgeable rabbi.
Yes. But most would, you know, in the Judeo-Christian debates, if you will, may not be the right term, but I think it may be appropriate. It's all, they attribute him to being a progressive rabbi.
Oh, indeed he was. Indeed he was. The Pharisees, mm-hmm. the ruling body of the Hebrew traditions at the time, mm-hmm. which was sponsored by Rome, hated him. Because he was
yeah.
doing the right thing. He said to the world, I come to fulfill the covenant of Abraham, the covenant of Moses. He was bringing Judaism back to Judaism. And the Pharisees, who were Roman-based, didn't like that idea. They were elected by the Roman governor, who at that time was Pontius Pilate.
Mm-hmm. The interpretation I get from going through New Testament scripture, however, it appears to me, in all candor, that those mainly responsible for his assassination, which I feel that's what it was, were the
Jews. It was.
I mean, I don't think there can be any question. The Romans were who they were. The Romans were who they were.
The Romans were the governing body of the, mm-hmm. the Egyptians. The Jews at the time were an oppressed people. They were, Herod Agrippa was, who was the king at the time, was an appointed mm-hmm. Satrap, as it were, mm-hmm. a governor appointed. He was a king puppet that was under the rule of Tiberius and mm-hmm. later Caligula, I believe. Well, he didn't make it to Claudius. He died when Claudius just took reign. But he was appointed by Tiberius to rule over Israel, Judea. There was no Israel. It was called Judea
mm-hmm.
in the province of Palestine, the land of Palestine.
A lot of what you're sharing, I mean, Jesus, I think, you know, the Hebrew word for Jesus is
Yeshua.
Which the meaning of that is the God of salvation. And to me, it means actually you're going beyond the law here. You're sharing knowledge with civilization, with those who will hear your words and your teachings mm-hmm. in terms of spirit. What is your spirit telling you? And does spirit supersede law? Is there something? And of course, for me, the New Testament is ripe with that message. Not that law is to be totally cast out.
Which version which version of the New Testament? The Catholic version? The Lutheran version, King James version, they were completely edited
right.
throughout all history.
Yes.
What we need to look at is the Aramaic version that was found in the Dead Sea Scrolls.
Right.
That's the version people should follow.
Mm-hmm. I don't know how much differential there is between the Aramaic version and the King James version, as an example, in terms of what Jesus actually taught. I know I do know this much. We can point to the Book of Thomas, which says some interesting things about the activities of Jesus, which I certainly won't go into now. Whether they're true or not, we don't know. We just don't know.
You know this, that when mm-hmm. King James didn't like a particular verse or a chapter, he rewrote them himself. He changed
right.
them entirely. There is, from the pagan point of view, there is a word,
yeah.
there is a thou shalt not suffer a witch to live. And in the Aramaic mm-hmm. version, the original, it was thou shalt not suffer a thief to live.
Mm-hmm.
But because they were upset with pagans, because we were doing things like Beltane, and the Christian people were looking at it and having a lot of fun with our traditions, it was thou
mm-hmm.
shalt never suffer a witch to live after then. So you have to watch how these things are written out. It's also true in my traditions. One pharaoh would change things different than another pharaoh. It's all
mm-hmm.
been, it's like a telephone game, you know, when you were a child. You whisper
right.
in a cup and somebody hears one thing and they say something else. We have to
and
go with our heart.
Since we're taking responsibility for things, the Greeks executed Socrates for impiety.
Mm-hmm.
And Anaxagoras, who gave us the concept of nous or Olympian mind, he too was exiled for impiety. Back then, politicians did not like philosophers all that much, and they gave them lots of strife. We have different versions of different books, and tonight is a good start because these things need to be discussed. These things need to be explored without the animosity that usually accompanies such discussion. So we made a very good beginning today, and because we're focusing on the Mediterranean and Judea was also part of the Mediterranean community, ideas flowed back and forth all the time. In fact, Herodotus in his histories wrote how a lot of the Greek ideas came from Egypt originally and from Phoenicia or Tyre. So it's a good thing to be discussing them because these traditions borrowed from each other and sometimes different versions still exist in different traditions. So we're approaching the end of today's episode, and I'd like for folks to be able to find both of you. So Setna, how can people find you?
Very simply, if you're on Facebook, look for me as Michael K. Waterman. You can reach me on my email address, which is mkwaterman@icloud.com. You can reach me by phone, 516-650-3691. That is also how you'll reach me on Phone a Wizard, which is my company. You can also reach me my address, which is Michael K. Waterman, 1699 Chatham, Chatham, Parkway, apartment or unit 1523A, Savannah, Georgia, 31405. Or you can get me through Hercules, of course.
Thank you so very much. And Michael?
Well, you can always message me, Michael Del Rossi, or preferably, I'd like you, those interested, to write to me at Michael Del Rossi, Post Office Box 129, Caldwell, New Jersey, 07006. I'm primarily engaged in what we call mind treatment or affirmative prayer. I consider myself a New Thought spiritualist, and I pray fervently for each and every request, and I thank the universe every time there is a positive report. So that's where they can reach me with any of their prayer requests, and affirmative prayer will be applied immediately to an extensive list, and I work at White Light, and that's essentially what I do. So it's Michael Del Rossi, Box 129, Caldwell, New Jersey. Just write it out. I would prefer you wrote it out. Handwritten note is preferable, and we will immediately enter into a affirmative prayer for anyone who's asking for it.
Thank you very much. And both of you, you both found traditions that resonate with your soul and inform and motivate your spirituality. With Setna, it's the spirituality of Kemet. With Michael, it's the spirituality of the New Testament. With me, it's the Olympians. And I know that both of you are very open-minded and willing to share your thoughts and your understandings and willing to listen to what other people are sharing. Many people resist doing that. What recommendation would you give to people who want to open up their minds but they're having a difficult time? We'll start with Setna.
I think that you need to realize that everyone in this universe is different. We all look at things in a different way. I had a dream once, which is quickly, I'll just say this quickly. It was a crystal sitting on a throne, and it was spinning around, and the light from the sun was hitting the crystal like a prism, and the light refracted into rainbow colors all over the earth, and everybody accepted or saw those colors in different ways. And so that's how I think people should look at this, that we all interpret the higher force in our own way and the way we understand it.
Thank you very much. And Michael?
Well, I agree with everything Michael just said. I just think there's the universe is mental. I think it's self-creating. I've been seeking God for 60 decades of my life. I've come to the realization that there's one divine source behind all things. And once we open up our channels to receive that divine source, we can interpret it in whatever way, direction we're led to. So for me, there's one source behind all things, very simply. And if we acknowledge that that infinite source also lives within us, the kingdom of God is within, according to the New Testament, according to what Jesus said. I believe that. I believe he tried to teach us another vibrational level of thinking, and I believe he was killed for it. So for me, divine science is the way to go, which simply acknowledges there is an intelligent universe out there, and we are all connected to it.
Thank you so very much. And just to let everyone know, Nous Olympian Mind will soon be joined by Pnevma. And Pnevma originally meant breath, but then it came to mean soul, and now it's part of the three gods in one as the Holy Spirit or the Holy Ghost. So the breathing in and out was thought to represent the life force in humanity and all living things. So we'll be exploring that as well. And we will also start having a conversation about different routes and how they understand and organize the world. So I am inviting both of you to these discussions, and I'll be blessed whenever you're free to participate in them. Thank you so very much. You're both awesome, and I'm blessed to have you as friends and companions on this journey. And thanks to all our listeners, whether you called in and you're patiently waiting in our queue, whether you clicked on a link and found yourself here, or whether you're going to check us out. Until next time, this is us wishing you joyous journeys and amazing adventures. Thanks again, guys.
Blessings all. Take care. Happy holidays.
You too.
Blessings.